Today's shiur will be in Maseches Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Samach Dalid, Omid Aleph. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shi'ur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we were discussing the din of Rav that says that a shtar whose content and witnesses sign on erased paper, the shtar is acceptable, is kosher. We are learning today Daf Kuf Samach Dalet. However, the actual reading of the Gemara will begin at the bottom of Kuf Samach Gimel Amid Beis for a line and a half. Gufo Omar Rav. This is a quote from what Rav said earlier. In order to find this, one can use the arrow that's provided in the margin, which indicates to look at Amid Aleph. That would mean that you would turn back to Kuf Samach Gimel Amid Aleph and try to find a corresponding arrow with an indication for Amid Beis. And you will notice such an arrow at the bottom of Kuf Samach Gimel Amid Aleph, where you see Rav's initial presentation of this halacha, where the Gemara presented it initially. And hence, this is a quote from there. Gufa Omar Rav, Shtar Habo Hu V'Edov Al HaMechak, a shtar whose contents, this document, whose contents, whose body, and witnesses are signed, and the witnesses signed everything on erased paper, kosher. V'im tomar, and if you say, why should this be kosher? We're at the Gemara at the top of Kuf Samach Dalar Aleph. You'll ask, if we allow Hu V'Edov Al HaMechak, wouldn't you say there's room for foul play? And what's the foul play? That once he has witnesses that have signed already, he can erase for a second time the body of the shtar and rewrite information that's convenient, more beneficial to him. And he has witnesses that already signed on the lower part. Have no fear, the Gemara says. Eino doime nimchak pam achas lenimchak shtei pa'omim. If he tries to do such a thing, it will be obvious that there was foul play. We will notice that the upper part of the shtar of the document was in fact erased twice, whereas the section the witnesses signed on had only been erased once. As we go on in the Gemara, we encounter a geometric form. The use of geometric forms in our marking system is the heart of the system. And we have notes on the side of the Gemara explaining what the role of these geometric forms is. In this case, we have the Mivneh. The triangle, in this context, not only does it represent a series as all other geometric forms do in our marking system, but in this case the triangle will be flipping around as you scan down the page, sometimes the point up and sometimes the point down. This is what we call a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. When the point is facing up, this will present a question. When the point is facing down, tshuvos, responses. Al dinoi shel Rav, all of this is concerning Rav's din, d'shtar habo hu v'edov al hamachak kosher, the d'shtar whose content and witnesses are on erased paper. So our Gemara continues, v'lechush dilmo shodi diuto amokim edim meikora u mochikle. If you are allowing Hu V'Edov Al HaMechak, is there not room for the following foul play? A person who was interested in preparing a shtar, Shodi Duto, he would place ink on the lower part of the shtar where ordinarily the witnesses sign. After placing ink on that part, the lower part of the paper, he would erase it, and then he would proceed to write over the whole paper something else of no consequence, and then erase the whole paper. What have we accomplished at this point? The lower part of the paper has been erased twice. The upper part of the paper has been erased once. And after doing that, he then goes ahead and prepares a shtar and has witnesses sign. The Gemara goes on, "Dechi hodar mochik lehai," when he then goes ahead and erases the shtar, the body of the document, the upper part of the paper, again, in effect, now the upper part has also been erased twice. And then when he writes over that newly erased upper section, then the document will in effect be entirely a document that had been erased twice. So he'll have his conveniently forged information on the top with witnesses having signed on the bottom. How do we get around that problem? Omar Abaye, and notice how the triangle flipped over. This is a response. Kosova Rav. We've circled Rav as so as to draw our attention to the fact that he's the focus of our discussion. Rav says, "Ein ho'edim choismin al hamachak elo im kein nimchak bifnehem." Witnesses will not sign on an erased document on an erased paper unless the initial erasure took place in front of them. The Rashbam across from here says, "Elim kein nimchak bifneim v'im yiru mokom chasimasa mishuna b'mechika min ha'elyoin." If they notice before they come to sign that the erased section that they're about to sign on looks different than the upper part, lo yachtomu, they won't sign. Hence, even in our suggested foul play scenario above, what had been the case? We had created a situation where the upper part of the document had been erased once and the lower part, before the witnesses actually signed, had been erased twice. They will notice this difference and they won't sign. Meisve, we raise a question on Rav. Notice how the triangle once again is facing up. We quote a Tanaic source. In our marking system, the Tanaic sources, as you have already heard in the introduction, are featured by frames around those lines that are of Tanaic origin, so as to set it apart from the rest of the Gemara. So we have a Tanaic source which says, "Hu al hanior, the eidov al hamechak, kosher." If a shtar is prepared on regular paper, namely non-erased, new, fresh paper, and the witness is signed on the lower part of the document that had been erased, that type of document is kosher, is okay. The question is, v'nechosh dilma mochik lei, v'kosiv mai deboi, why not suspect that maybe he will erase the upper part after the witness has already signed the shtar? He'll erase that upper part and write whatever he wants, and lo and behold, you will have that situation where the body of the shtar and the witnesses are on erased paper, which according to Rav is okay. The Gemara presents the answer, the solution. Dekasvi hochi, when the witnesses come to sign the lower part of a paper, of a piece of paper, which happens to be erased, and the upper part was still fresh, the witnesses, write the following. Anachno sahadi, we the witnesses, chasamna al machaka, ushtara kosav al nayora. We signed on that which is erased, and the shtar, meaning the body of the document, the content of the document, was written on non-erased paper. The markings that you see here, namely the use of the diamonds to feature the words sahadi and shtora, and the double underlines to emphasize the words machako and niyora, will be of use when we go on in the Gemara a little bit later, and we can see a contrast point. The Gemara asks, okay, so we see that the witnesses sign this they signed this piece of information as well. They write this, that they signed on that which was, they signed their signatures on erased paper, and where, while the upper paper was fresh. The Gemara asks, "De kasvi hecho, where do they write this information? E milatachas, if they write it at the very bottom, Gaisle, the fellow who owns the shtar, who owns the document, he'll just cut it off. E iloi mochikle, if it's on an upper section of the paper, the top part of the paper, he will erase it." The Gemara answers, "Have no fear. De kasvi bein sahado l'sahad. They write this information between the two witnesses that sign." The Gemara raises a new question, and you can see this is a long question by virtue of the marking that appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a triangle with a kuf in it, a kushia, with a vertical dashed line indicating the length of this question. Ihochi, if so, namely everything that we've said till this point is to be accepted, Emo Seifa, let us state the Seifa, the latter part of the Tanaic source that we started quoting above. Hu al hamachak, the body of the shtar is on an erased section, the edov al haniyar, and the witness is signed the lower part of the paper which was still fresh, puzzle. We consider that void. The fear being that he, the owner of the document, will erase the upper part and forge information and rely on the witnesses that have already signed. But we ask, am I possible? Why should that be unacceptable? Hochanami, in this case too, in the Seifa case as well, nichtivu hochi, let the witnesses, if we are so reliant upon their information, let them write similarly. Anachno sadi, we the witnesses. Notice how we've used the diamond here, so you can compare this to the phrase above, where the witnesses signed the same type of statement, where the witnesses would say, "Anachno sahadi, we the witnesses, chosamno al niyora, we signed our signatures on fresh paper, ushtara al machaka, and the shtar section being on in the shtar, meaning the body of the document being on erased paper." The upper part of the document having been erased. Hashto nami my amris. What will you say? Why should it still anyway be considered puzzle? My amris, what could you possibly say? Mochek, choser umochek. That he would erase the shtar a second time. And maybe that should be a problem. And why should that maybe be a problem? Because the witnesses declare that they signed on fresh paper, and that remains fresh. They also said the shtar was written on an erased section. Well, if he erases a second time, that in fact will be the case. It's still an erased section, and then he writes upon the second erasing his forgery. But still, that should not be a problem. Ho Amris, we already said above, Eino Dome Nimchak Pa'amachas LeNimchak Shtei Pa'amim. That there is a difference, you can see a difference between that which was erased once, as opposed to that which was erased twice. So why should it be that if you have a shtar that was, that the body of which is written on an erased section, and the witness is signed on the fresh section, why should that be unfit? If any foul play took place, namely that a second erasure took place, which would be grounds for raising our suspicions, but we'll notice that. The Gemara answers, we won't notice it so quickly. Hani mili, that which we said, that you can tell a difference between nimchak pa'am achas le'nimchak shtei pa'amim, hecho dechasimi sa'adi amachaka, that is where the witnesses also signed on an erased section. In other words, they signed on the bottom of a piece of paper that was entirely erased. And therefore, if their signatures were signed on an erased section and the upper part would have gone through a situation where there was a shtar and then he erased the upper part a second time, then we would be able to notice the difference between the two types of erasures on the same piece of paper. However, where the witnesses did not sign on an erased section, but they signed on the lower part of the paper, which was still fresh, and just the upper part had been erased twice, lo yadia, it won't be noticeable, because you don't have that contrast between two types of erasures. And as a result of that, the Seifa rules that when the body of the shtar is on the machak, on the erase section, and the witnesses are signed on the fresh section, we cannot accept such a document. The Gemara asks, but still, why not? Velesi Megilto Achriti, bring another piece of paper, Velimchok Velivmi, and erase it, and compare the erasure of this other piece of paper, namely that piece of paper, this new piece of paper you'll have erased once, compare it with the body of the shtar of our particular shtar with the witnesses on it, and see if they're similar. Then I know there was no foul play. If they're not similar, then I'll say that our shtar experienced foul play. The Gemara says that test won't be sufficient. Lo domi machaka deha megilta the machaka deha megilta. There is no similarity, there is no guaranteed similarity between the erasures of different qualities of paper. Some papers are thicker than others, especially if you're dealing with papers that were really written on parchment, that the documents were really written on parchment. It's very difficult to guarantee the similar thickness, and hence the different, and as a result of the inability to say that they are similar, we will not be able to compare the erasures that we do on both documents. The Gemara asks, but still, why should the Seifa be a problem? Why should we say, Hu halamachak and Edov ala nior is possible? I have another solution. V'lekablo l'chasimas yoda desadi b'veidina. Let the witnesses who signed the lower part of the document, and we said in the Seifa they signed on fresh paper, so let those same people sign a separate piece of paper. Let us ascertain the validity, the veracity of these signatures through confirming them in a court. And then let us take our document, which we know has legitimate signatures on it, and let us erase the entire document. That's what the Gemara says here, the limchoik, erase the entire document, validmi, and now we can compare the what we know is a singular erasure at the bottom where the witness is signed. And don't worry, we already confirmed their signatures, so we're not losing anything by erasing their signatures on the original document right now. And we know that the bottom of that document experienced just a one-time erasure. And let us see how this compares to the upper part of the document. If it is the same, then we know that the upper part of the document, which is the issue of our question, there's no foul play if they do not look the same. So we know that the lower part, which was erased once, looks different than the upper part, which has been erased twice. Omar Rav Hoshaya. Rav Hoshaya responds and says, this test will not be sufficient either. Einoi doime nimchak ben yoimoi lenimchak ben shnei yomim. You cannot compare things that are freshly erased, situations were erased 2 days ago. Namely, they're not freshly erased. At this point in the Gemara, let us go over the last few lines again to make sure that we have a clear pshat in the Gemara. What we'd like to do at this point is go up several lines, the approximately six lines. The first word on the line is low. We have a triangle with the point facing up. The Gemara suggests, V'leisi megilto achriti, v'limchok v'lidmi. if we have suspicions about our case of hu al hamechak, the eid of al aniyar, as being a problem, namely that the upper part of the document was really erased twice, namely a shtar had been, a legitimate shtar had been written with witnesses signing the bottom, which is fresh paper, but then this owner of the document went ahead and erased the upper part again and wrote in forged information. So the Gemara says, by bringing another piece of paper, that Megilta Achriti, and erasing it and trying to compare, lo domi macha kadoha Megilta, the macha kadoha Megilta. Erasures of one paper will not be comparable to erasures on another paper. So it will not reveal any conclusive information. The Gemara asks, V'likablo l'chasimos yoda desadi bebeidina, why not accept the or verify the signatures on our current document in the Beis Din? The lower part of the paper we know is fresh. Now, v'limchok, let us erase the signatures on the original document. V'libmi, and we know that the bottom part of the shtar is a first-time erasure. If it looks like the upper part of the document, then I know that the upper part was erased once as well, and no foul play took place. Omar Rav Hoshaya, Rav Hoshaya says that will not be sufficient for us. Eino doime nimchak ben yomo, le nimchak ben shnei yomim. The bottom, which is freshly erased, will not possibly compare to the upper part, which was not erased today, it was erased earlier. So that it won't be a conclusive test. It could be that the upper part of the document was erased only once, and hence legitimate. And still, it won't compare to that which is freshly erased. So the Gemara says to that, Why do you say that's inconclusive? V'lishay, let the document sit a day and age it a day, and by doing that, the lower part of the document, which was yesterday freshly erased, is no longer freshly erased, and we'll be able to compare it with that which is above, which with the body of the shtar and its level of erasure. To this, the Gemara responds, we can't rely on that. Omar Reb Yirmiya, Chayshinon LeBezdin Toyim. We're fearful of encountering a court that is not so expert in the halacha, and they will make a mistake, and they won't know to be so precise in the testing rules and delay it, and they can come to allowing a shtar to be machshir a shtar, which is posel, which is really no good. And therefore, the Rabbanan made a blanket rule saying that hu al hamachak and edov al haniyor is just not acceptable. Rabbi Chanino ben Gamliel Omer, Mekushar, the Mishnah on Kuf Samach Omer Aleph says that a Mekusha Shekosvoi al Eidov Mitocho Kosher, that a Shtar Mekushar, the sewn up type document whose witness is signed on the inside, namely in the part that's folded over and sewn, is kosher. Why? Because you can always unravel it, undo the stitching, and it will appear as a regular shtar whose witness is signed on the same side as the body. So Rabbi Chanino ben Gamliel is not upset by a mekushar whose witness is signed on the inside. At this point, Rebbe raises a question on Rabbi Chanino ben Gamliel. We have a topic heading in the outside margin entitled No Say. Kushias Rebbe al Divrei Rabbi Chanino ben Gamliel. Shomar b'Mishnah, the Mekusher Shechosmu Eidov Besoichoi Kosher. Rebbe will ask a question on Rabbi Chanino ben Gamliel, who said in the Mishnah that a sewn document whose witnesses were signed on the inside of the document is okay, but Meshiochol Asoso Poshut. We've provided in the little space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text a kuf that's encircled, namely a kushia, which following the kuf, you have a dashed vertical line which goes till Amud Beis, indicating the length of this question. Heshiv Rebbe le Rebbe le Divrei Rebbe Chanina ben Gamliel. Rebbe asks on Rebbe Chanina ben Gamliel, who said that a mekusher yachol asoy so poshut. There is a problem with that. We have in our markings a bracket that is not designed to fulfill its usual role, namely of skipping and picking up from after the brackets, but rather we will read the Gemara straight through. However, the role of the brackets is simply to say that it is background. What's in the brackets serves as background for the main question, which comes after the brackets. We've also provided a topic heading on the outside margin entitled Nosei, and we've mentioned that the Nosei that's featured here is that which is within the bracketed section. Zmano shel mekusher eino doyma lezmano shel poshut. The date that one writes on a sewn type document is not the same type of dating that we write on a regular document. So Rebbe is asking Rebbe Chanina ben Gamliel, how can you say that a shtar mekusher, when unraveled, a shtar mekusher whose witness is signed on the inside of the document, on the document side, on the body side of the document, like when unraveled turns into a regular shtar? The Gemara asks, or Rebbe asks at the top, V'halo eino doyma ezmanu shel zeh lezmanu shel zeh. The dating system that's used for one type of shtar is not the same as that used for another. Poshut, in the case of a regular shtar, molach shana, when the king reigned for a year, moinin lo shana, it's recorded his actual year of reign. Namely, this shtar was written in the first year of his realm. Shtayim, when he has reigned for 2 years, moinin lo shtayim, then it's counted as 2 years, and we would record that this shtar was prepared in the second year of King so-and-so. However, mekushar, the practice is different. Molach shana, moinin lo shtayim. After the king ruled for 1 year, we record it as if he ruled for 2 years. Shtayim, if he ruled for 2 years, moinin lo shalosh, will count it as 3 years. In other words, with a mekushar, there's a type of post-dating that takes place, which is known to characterize a mekushar. Now, what's the problem that would arise if you accept Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel's position that a mekushar, bearing in mind with its unusual dating system, its post-dating system, with witnesses that signed on the same side as the body of the shtar, is okay, because if you unravel it, it will look like a regular shtar, but not quite so. The Gemara goes on, presenting the problem. V'zinnin di Yosef minei zuzi b'mekushar. Could be a situation where a person borrowed money from so-and-so using a shtar mekushar. In such a case, if he borrowed from him in a given year, it's written in as if it's post-dated, indicating that the loan took place a year later, which is the normal way of preparing a shtar mekushar. Umisrami le zuzi beni beni, and the borrower chances upon money, comes upon cash in the interim. Upora le, and he pays the debt that he owes. V'omar le, and he requests from the lender, havli shtaroi, give me my shtar, in this case, give me my shtar mekushar. The Omarle, and the Malva, the lender, says irkasli, I lost it. The Kosav le Tavra, and the lender, instead of returning the original document, the original loan document, he provides the borrower with a receipt. The receipt is written with the actual date in it, the day on which he paid back, with the current year of the king's reign as part of the date. V'chimoti zimnei mashvilei poshut. And when the time comes, namely when the next year of the king's realm arrives, he takes that original shtar mekushar that he claimed he lost, which really wasn't so, and he unravels it and makes it into a regular shtar, the omarle, and then that lender turns to the borrower and says, hashto diyasvis minoi, you now, meaning recently, borrowed from me a new loan. In other words, you owe me more money. And all of this happened as a result of Rabbi Chanino ben Gamliel's telling us that a shtar mekusha she'edov mitocho is okay. The Gemara answers, Kosova, Rabbi Chanino ben Gamliel is of the opinion, ein kois ben shovar, that receipts are not written. In other words, this borrower will not pay up the loan unless the original loan document is torn up. Otherwise, he has no security. The Gemara asks a new question. We've indicated this by the use of a semicolon to show that this is not a continuous flow of ideas, though we're in the same topic. We mentioned on the bottom of Omen Aleph that Rebbe presented a question to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel based on Rebbe's knowledge of the details of Shtar Mekushar and the unique dating system that's used. The Gemara raises a question, as you can see with the long question marking that appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. Umi boki Rebbe b'makushar. Is Rebbe really expert in the halachos regarding a mekushar? Veho hahu mekushar, the osula kame de Rebbe. There was a case of a get mekushar, a shtar mekushar, a sewn up document that came to Rebbe in the first year of a particular king, and the date that was recorded in it was, this is in the second year of his realm. The Omar Rebbe, and Rebbe upon seeing that reacted, he said, shtar meuchar ze, that this document is a post-dated document. His reaction showing us that he is not familiar with the details of Shtar Mekushar. The Omarle Zunin LeRebbe, Zunin, the name of a scholar, said to Rebbe, he said, what are you amazed at? Kach minhoga shel uma zu. This is the custom of this particular nation. Molach shana monin lo shtayim. A king who reigned for a year, it's counted as if it's his second year, as if he reigned for 2 years. Shtayim monin lo shalosh, and if he reigned for 2 years, it's counted as if he reigned for 3 years. So how can it be stated that Rebbe raised a question on Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel based on the details of dating a shtar mekusha when he, as you can see from this story, himself was not expert in the dating system? The Gemara answers, Bosor deshama mizunin savra, after he heard what Zunin said, namely that which we learned in the last few lines, Rebbe heard on an earlier occasion from Zunin, and after having understood this, we see Rebbe raising his question that he did at the bottom of Omer Aleph, which shows that there is no inconsistency with regard to Rebbe. Initially, he did not know the details. He learned them from Zunin. After he learned them from Zunin, he then was able to raise the question that he did on Rabbi Chanino ben Gamliel. Hahu shtora, a shtar poshut, David Kosev bei Bishnas Ploni Arkon. We have this in quotation marks, indicating this is the text that was written in the document. This is the date. Bishnas Ploni Arkon. Omar Rabbi Chanina, Yivdok, Emosai Omad Arkon Ba'arkenuse. We have to check out when Arkon, a word referring to the king, when he assumed his throne. in the first year of a king's realm, the description of the king is by use of this word, Archon. And therefore, this shtar, this document, if it's a loan document, the lender can use it as a means of collection from the first year of his realm, of this king's realm. So it's important to establish at what point in the year he assumed the throne. And thereby I'll know from when this document became valid. The Gemara asks, V'dilmo d'orech malchusei? Maybe the word Archon simply means that the king has ruled a long time on the throne. And if that be the case, if that's what the meaning of Archon is, then the lender would not be able to collect the payment from properties that he may have a lien on unless he's going to collect from this point in time onwards and not from any earlier point, because it could very well be that the loan was extended only very recently. Omar Rav Hoshaya, kach minhogo shel umazu. The custom of this nation that's is portrayed in the Gemara, Shona Rishona, Korin Lo Archon. From the very first year of the king's realm, he's already referred to by the term Archon, namely a shtar that says that a document that has a date in it indicating this is from the year of Archon. It really means that the loan took place in the first year of this king's realm. Shnia Korin Lo Digun. In his second year, the king is referred to by this term, Digun, indicating it's a shtar prepared in the second year of his realm. The Gemara asks, even so, if you see the word Archon, does that mean you know for certainty from which year the document became valid? Vidilma avure avruhu vahadar ukmuhu. Maybe it's a king that was dethroned in the interim and reascended to his throne later on. And the shtar that we see in front of us is a shtar that was prepared upon his second ascension to the throne. And if that be the case, so why would one think that he could use this shtar to collect from his original ascension to the throne? In other words, just by seeing the word Archon in the shtar doesn't guarantee that I know when it became valid. Omar of Yirmiya, Hahu, that case of a king that was dethroned and successfully ascended the throne a second time, Archon Digun Koru Lei. He would have a different title, namely Archon Digun. Therefore, if you see a shtar that has just the term Archon written in it, that would indicate that it was a shtar prepared in the first year of this particular king's realm. We see in our Gemara a brackets that starts here, and the length of the brackets is indicated by a unique vertical dash dotted line that appears to the side of the Gemara, in this case to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. This dash dotted line, as we said, indicates the length of this bracketed section. As far as the use of these brackets, we have a note on the inside margin. Sograim elu einom l'shem diluk. These brackets are not for the purpose of skipping the text. Ela boim l'tachem. They rather coming to show the boundaries. L'tachem keta she'eno mityaches l'shtar mekusher. To show the boundaries of a piece of Gemara that's not directly related to preparing sewn documents, Ela misaseg beinyan lishonos shel kamuyot, but rather this section of Gemara that appears in the brackets deals with expressions that demonstrate quantity, kamo haloshon digun shehuzkar liel, just like we saw the use of the term digun before, indicating a second year of a king's realm. After the brackets, one may notice that the Gemara goes back into a discussion concerning documents, and specifically sewn documents. In the outside margin, we have a title heading and a structural note, Nosei Mifneh, and we've also indicated that this structural note deals with the section of Gemara in the brackets. Because in the section of Gemara that will follow, within the brackets, you'll notice there are diamonds. What is the role of these diamonds? So we have indicated in our note in the outside margin a diamond form. Number one, Nozir. Number two, Bias. In the case of Bias, we're going to be talking about afflictions that houses can suffer from when they receive Nigoyim, Nigei Batim. Shnei Mekoros, two sources will be shown in the Gemara, She Mofiim Bohem L'Shoynes Shel Misparim. In these two sources we will see expressions of numbers, Kegoin, Digun, V'Tetrigon, V'Chulei, different words that have to do with numbers. Let us now pick up the Gemara, starting with the bracketed section. Tonu Rabbanan, source number one, and we've indicated it with a little one. Later you can see a number two, introducing a second source. So Tonu Rabbanan, Hareini Nozir, a person declares his desire to be a Nozir, one who restrains himself from wine consumption and other halachas that are characteristic of a Nozir. Sumchus Omar Hina. Sumchus says, if this fellow said the following, Hareini Nozir Hina, I want to accept upon myself Nozir Hina. What is he really saying? Achas. He's accepting upon himself a singular period of Nazirus, which means he would have to observe the laws regarding Nozir for 30 days. If he says Digun, that means Shtayim. He's interested in keeping two units of Nazirus, meaning he'll be a Nozir for 60 days. Trigun, Shloisha. Tetrigon, Arba. If he uses the word trigun, we know the prefix tri, or you have the expression trio indicating three. That means three Nazirus periods, or tetrigon, arba, pentagon, chomesh. The term pentagon is probably familiar to many of our participants, that indicating five periods of Nazirus. Tan Rabbanan. The next source deals with a topic known as Nigei Botim. Nigoyim are afflictions that the Torah has an extensive discussion about in Parshas Tazria and Mitzora. One of the sets of afflictions affects houses. This is in addition to Nigei Odom and Nigei Begodim. There's also something called Nigei Botim. The Gemara here will tell us that this whole realm of Nigoyim afflicts only houses that are four-sided. Four-sided houses, square or rectangular-shaped houses that have four corners to them. However, the source continues. It starts here, Bias, Ogul, a round structure, Digun, Tetrigun, Trigun, Pentagon. If it's a digun, it has two corners. You can see in the lower part of the page, we've supplied a diagram in the inside margin of what a two-cornered house is. Namely, it has one side of it has two corners, but the other side of the house rounds. This, by the way, is an aerial view of the house. So a two-cornered house, as we just described it, or a triangular shaped house, three corners, or a five cornered structure, a pentagon, those type of structures are eino mitama minigoyim, do not absorb this particular affliction. However, tetrigon mitame binigoyim, the source concludes by saying a four cornered structure does absorb nigoyim. Mino hani mili. How, from where do we know that Tumas Negoyim of Nige Botim afflicts only that which is four-cornered. Detona Rabbanan. We have a source. The source refers to Psukim. Posuk Lamed Zayin in Perek Yudalad of Vayikra and Posuk Lamed Tes. We've included on the inside margin these Psukim and dashed underlined the main expressions that the Gemara will be referring to. So the Gemara says, Lamalahu Omer, in Posuk Lamed Zayin, the Torah says, Kir Kiros, namely, it doesn't use the word Kir in the singular, it uses the word Kiros in the plural, which means Shtayim, it's a reference to two. Lamatahu Omer, Kir Kiros, and in Posuk Lamed Tes, also the word Kiros appears, which equals Shtayim, another two walls. So you have an accounting in this Pasuk that deals with Nige Botim, you have an accounting of four walls. When you combine four walls, you get four corners. Hare Kan Arba. So from this we see that it's a four-cornered structure that is subject to Tumas Negoyim and not something else. Going back to the realm of Shtoros, Hahu Mekushar, a case of a shtar mekushar that the also the kameh de Rebbe that came to Rebbe. Before we go on in the Gemara, I think it's worth noting our topic heading in the outside margin, the nosei shnei maisim. There are two incidents that the Gemara will be reporting. We've indicated them in our markings by an aleph and a few lines later a beis. These two maisim shenitan lulmoid mehem inyonim beisur loshen hora. We'll be able to learn something from these incidents that have connection to the halachas of Loshon Hara, the prohibition of what's loosely translated of evil speech concerning others. However, I want to be cautious in translating the expression Loshon Hara, because as we'll see in our Gemara, it's not necessarily that which is the obvious evil speech per se, but it has a broader connotation. So from this point onwards, we'll simply refer to this topic as Loshon Hara. Notice how in our note in the outside margin we featured a double underline. This is a reference to the appearance of a double underline in the Gemara as well, where the expression Loshon Hara is featured. So as we go on in the Gemara, we opened up with a story involving a shtar mekusher that came to Rebbe, V'omar Rebbe, and Rebbe's reaction when he saw the shtar mekusher was, Ein zman bozeh. There's no date in this. Omar le Rebbe Shimon bar Rebbe, le Rebbe. So Rebbe's son said to his father, Rebbe Shimon said to Rebbe, Shema ben ksharov muvla. Maybe the date is within the stitched section. Palye v'chazye, he unstitched it, and lo and behold, he saw the date. Hodar choza be Rebbe v'bishus. The Rashbam says at the lower part of the page, choza be v'bishus, kasavur shehu kasvoi. Rebbe thought that Rebbe Shimon, his son, wrote the shtar. Rebbe's desire was that he would prefer them not preparing Mekushar, but rather shtar poshut, because in the preparation of Mekushar, there's a tendency to make mistakes. Inami, another pshat that he offers, Lefishahoya Muvla Ben Ksharov Yosemidai. The date appeared to be too absorbed within the stitch section, more than is necessary. Sherebi atzmo ta'abo, and it was so hidden, so to speak, that even Rebbe made a mistake about it. This caused Rebbe to show an expression of being upset, and that's what the Gemara means when it says that Choza be Rebbe bebishus. He showed his being upset. Omarle, so Rabbi Shimon reacted and said, Lav ano kasvete, I didn't write this shtar, Rabbi Yehuda chaito kasve. So Rabbi Shimon says, he's the one that's guilty of writing this, Rabbi Yehuda chaite. Omarle, Rabbi, upon hearing that, said, Klach mi loshen hora hazeh. stay away from Lashon Hara. The Rashbam adds over here that you shouldn't have levied the responsibility of preparing this negative document on him. You should have said, I did not write it, instead of saying, he, Rabbi Yehuda Chaita, is the one that wrote it. Continuing in the Gemara, Zimnan, Havi Yosef Kamei, on another occasion, Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe was sitting in front of Rebbe, V'koposik Sidro B'Sefer Tehillim, and he was studying the book of Psalms, the book of Tehillim. Omar Rebbe, Kama Miyushar Ksavze, Rebbe, upon noticing the scroll, the Tehillim scroll that was written, handwritten, Rebbe said, what a beautiful script. Omalei, Reb Shimon bar Rebbe said back, Rebbe Shimon Hassan said, Lav ano kasvese, Yehuda chaito kasve, I didn't write this beautiful Tehillim, Yehuda chaito wrote it. Omalei, klach mi loshon hara hazeh, you should distance yourself from this loshon hara. So Mora says, it's a little surprising, Bishlomo hasam, I understand the Aleph case, the first case, Iko loshon hara, that there's an element of evil speech. After all, Rebbe was criticizing, was showing his being upset, criticizing that shtar mekushar. So assigning the negative shtar to an individual could easily be classified as loshon hara. Elohocha, but in the case of the complimentary expression concerning the Tehillim scroll, my loshon hara iko. What negative speech is there? The Gemara answers, we can understand this from Rav Dimi's teaching. Mishum de Rav Dimi. De Toni Rav Dimi achva de Rav Safra. Rav Dimi teaches the following source. Li'olam al yisapir odom b'toivoser shel chavero. In general, a person should restrain himself from praising someone else in the presence of others. Shemitoch toivosoi bo lidei ro'oso. That through the praises that one bestows upon his friend, this leads to negative statements. One is probably quite familiar with this situation when you hear complimentary remarks about a particular individual and you say, oh, he might be very good in that, but what about this and what about that? And that just draws out negativism. So the halacha takes a preemptory move and says, better to stay away from the singing the praises of others in front of other people, because that could easily lead to the negative. Of course, as we've mentioned on other occasions in the context of our shiurim, these shiurim on the Daf Yomi are not designed to be of a practical halachic nature, but rather we're learning the Gemara to see the basis that forms halachic literature. In order to understand and follow halacha, it is necessary to study those books, those volumes that deal with the application of Jewish law. And when dealing with the realm of Lashon Hara, there are famous works that were written by the Chofetz Chaim, known as Hilchus Lashon Hara, Sefer Chofetz Chaim, Sefer Shmiras HaLashon, that cover these topics. As we go on in the Gemara, we will notice a house form surrounding Rav, and on our outside margin, we have a topic heading, and following that, a structural note. The topic heading is Sholosh Averos Shein Odom Nitzol Mehen B'chol Yom. Three types of offenses that a person cannot avoid every day. In other words, every day a person will find himself falling into the violation of the following offenses that the Gemara will list. We've also featured the house marking around Rav's name. In our note we say the Mivneh, Shnei Memros Mishmei de Rav Be'inyin Averos. Two comments of Rav concerning the realm of violations. And what's common to these two comments that we will see in the name of Rav is the topic of Lashon Hara. So let us see the Gemara. Amar of Amram, Amar Rav. Shalosh averos ein odo nitzel mehen b'chol yom. There are three averos, three sins that a person on a daily basis cannot avoid. One, hirhur avera. These are thoughts that concern the realm of immodesty. Number two, iyun tefila. The Rishonim have different pshatim on what this is. One approach is the person who prays, he thinks that because he's praying, his prayer will be fulfilled. This is a phenomenon of one who anticipates his specific prayer being fulfilled. The Tosfos offers another pshat in Iyun Tefila, is the inability to fully concentrate during one's davening. And the Tosfos quotes a Yerushalmi that mentions that Rav Matanya used to say that I owe a debt of gratitude to my head because it bows when I get to the section in the Shemona Esrei known as Modim, which requires a bowing, indicating that his head seemed to bow automatically, being that he wasn't concentrating fully on what he was saying. This being a common phenomenon, and hence is classified as one of those things that a person cannot avoid. The third is v'loshon hara. The Gemara asks, in amazement, loshon hara sakodaitach? Are we to assume from this comment that every day a person violates lashon hara, he violates outright evil speech of others? That's not necessarily so. A lot of people are able to go through entire days without practicing outright evil speech concerning others. Ella, so what is it that the Gemara classifies, as Rav classifies, as that which is difficult to avoid? Avak loshon hara. These are comments that literally are referred to as the residue or the dust of loshon hara, meaning it's not outright evil speech, but it's the use of terms that would indicate that if you think things through, you will come to say negative references to other people. Omar of Yehuda Omarav, Roiv Begezel. Majority of people violate theft. One shouldn't be startled here when thinking that rove people practice armed robberies or pickpocketing or thievery in the conventional sense. The Rashbam says rove people, though, are choshed on violations concerning monetary matters, whereby a person withholds wages from workers that deserve payment on time or don't give them the benefit of their full wages and rationalize their financial behavior in such a way. But when it comes to the letter of the law, they are really depriving someone of money that's duly owed to them. So most of the population is involved in this form of gezel, in this form of thievery. Umiut ba'arayas, a minority of the population is involved with violations of arayas, which covers the realm of immorality, especially involving immorality with relatives or forbidden relations. V'hakol b'loshon hara, and everybody is guilty of loshon hara. We'll just translate for immediate purposes. Everyone is guilty of outright evil speech of others. So the Gemara asks, like we saw before, b'loshon hara sakadaitach, is one to think that everybody is guilty of evil speech of others? Elo avak loshon hara. Everyone is guilty at some time or another in violating this form of avak loshon hara, residual loshon hara, offhanded references or comments that are said in improper tones from which people derive negative implications concerning others. What we've done, by the way, in the markings is we've also highlighted with a double underline and dots in it the two times the Gemara makes a reference to Avak Loshon Hara to help emphasize the main point of the sugya. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.